Star-Crossed, Part 9, Defeat Never Permanent. Saturday, August 5th, 2356. QNV Archangel, Quarren Migrant Fleet. The Bridge of the Archangel was a cavernous space, but its Quarren owners had made such major changes to it in however long it had been since they acquired the vessel that Miranda almost didn't realize they'd arrived. Only the huge panoramic windows gave it away, until she looked more closely and saw that the room was still a standard Genom mission control-style bridge, with the flight dynamics consoles closest to the windows and the captain's station up at the back. It was just so beautifully ornamented and so heavily festooned with hanging plants and what looked like creeper vines that Miranda, who had been expecting the sterile whiteness of a Genom command deck, hadn't realized it at first. The rest of the ship was the same, with the exception of the very business-like conclave chamber, but still, plants on the bridge? These were a deeply peculiar people. They did seem to know their trade, though. A quick glance at the tactical plot up on one of the main holodisplays showed that the Archangel and her escorts, a dozen vessels strong, had nearly finished maneuvering to break away from the rest of the flotilla. At all the stations, encounter-suited Quarrians worked briskly, many of them seeming to do as much of their work with those holographic hand computers as their actual ship controls. Up on his little dais at the back of the room, the ship's apparent captain, a man not quite as tall as, but a little broader than, Admiral Zora, his suit mostly silvery gray with red accents, turned and saluted the Admiral. "Alpha Group has nearly cleared the fleet perimeter, Admiral," he reported. "Estimate time to spacefold, 2 minutes."
"Excellent," Kaviran Zora replied. "Tally, you'd better help the navigators. You've got the best data as to where Halo actually is. It'd be a hell of a note for us to fold in on the wrong side of the system," he added with a laugh.
"Right," said Tally, who didn't seem to think it was funny. She powered up her Omnitool and went down to the front row, the area called the Trench, where the navigation and guidance operators' stations were.
"This must be Tali Shukra's mysterious benefactor," said the captain, and then, with a short bow, "Captain Rael Daka of Us Archangel."
"Miranda Lawson," Miranda replied. "Can you give me a better idea of what we're likely to be up against?" Captain Daka asked. "All I got from listening to the conclave discussion was a small fleet, which can mean a lot of things."
16 ships, we believe, but we don't know what kinds," Miranda replied. "The Blue Suns are a major mercenary organization and crime syndicate, but their strength mainly lies in tactical manpower. They provide muscle for industrial takeovers, corporate wars, and the like. I doubt their starships are particularly advanced or capable. For most of their purposes, they don't need to be. The Suns prefer to prey on people who are already helpless."
Daka nodded. "Well, we have a lot of experience dealing with people like that." He returned his attention to the tactical plot, and then, in a conversational sort of voice, asked, "Why'd you do it?"
"Pardon?"
"Give such a find away to Tali Shukra. I mean, don't get me wrong, she's a good kid. I've had my eye on her for my cruise. She started secondary tutoring, but..." He shrugged and glanced at Miranda for a moment before turning back to the display. "Most humans wouldn't give one of us a spent D-cell, much less a major celestial discovery."
"This seems like a strange time to discuss my motivations," Miranda said diplomatically.
"Just making conversation," Daka said. "Nothing to do for the next 30 seconds or so but wait." Miranda smiled.
"Fair enough. I think the only answer that'll fit in that amount of time is, I didn't need it anymore."
Daka laughed. "Nice. Well, it doesn't really matter why you did it, I guess. It was a hell of a neighborly thing to do. And I'll do everything I can to keep your people alive."
"Thank you, Captain."
"Don't mention it, Captain." One of the technicians working in the first row of stations where communication and tactical plotting lived turned around and said,
"Sir, the group is in position."
"Excellent. Thank you." Daka keyed his Omnitool into comm mode. "What do you say, Dalra? Think that old fold drive will work one more time?"
"Long as I'm not paying for the neutrons it's going to burn to do it," a woman's voice replied.
"Ready when you are."
"Okay. Alpha Group, stand by. When this space fold is complete, we're going to drop straight into a combat situation, so I want everybody's weapons hot and the fighters in the tubes before we jump."
All stations report ready for action, Captain, the tech who'd reported before said.
Navigation, how's our curve look?
A-OK, sir, the chief navigator. His station was the one at the very end of the trench, the only one down there with a direct line of sight back up to the captain's perch, replied, giving a thumbs up.
Here we go, then. Daka pointed at the front window. Execute.
BSS Incinerator, Scandia CN-38 system.
I gotta hand it to this guy, said Relkin. He is one hell of a pilot. Maybe two hells.
He's making us look like fools out there, Vito growled.
Standing up, he yelled to the bridge at large,
For fuck's sake, isn't there anybody who can kill that guy?
That's the last of our fighters, the comm operator dragooned into playing the impromptu task force's air boss reported. He's taken a beating, but he's still flying.
I want that guy dead, Vito roared.
Turning to Captain Kronfeld, he added,
Hear that? I don't care what else happens. Abort the rest of the op if you have to, but kill that motherfucker! Him being dead is now the number one priority of my life.
What about Zaid? Relkin asked.
Fuck Zaid. He isn't going anywhere.
Kronfeld turned to his bridge crew.
You heard the man, he said with a faint sigh of resignation. All gun crews target the Valkyrie.
Whoa, I think we pissed them off, Griffin said as a bolt from a heavy turbo laser flashed past.
Before you do what I know you're thinking of doing, Vision said, keep in mind that we've got four tiny lasers left. Make that three. The beam condenser on number two isn't going to last more than another five or six shots. And our deflector shields are totally fried. This is not the time to demonstrate what a stud you are by making a frontal attack on a warship.
I haven't got a lot of options, Viz, said Griffin as he belted the Valkyrie through a pinwheel turn and made for the incinerator. Gotta keep them distracted somehow.
I don't think that's going to be a problem much longer, Vision said. Subspace anomaly detected, bearing 203 Mark 12, range 3000, probably incoming spacefold.
You watch. With my luck, it'll be a goddamn Star Destroyer.
It was. For a second, Griffin couldn't believe his eyes. He had meant the remark as a dark joke, figuring there was no conceivable way that Genom would be taking an interest in this system at this moment. But there it was, the unmistakable arrowhead shape of one of the most lethal starships in the galaxy. To spacers everywhere since the fall of the Wedge Defense Force, the profile of an Imperator-class Star Destroyer was something very like the living embodiment of fear itself. Then he looked more closely and saw the curlicued markings and elaborate striped patterns that adorned its hull instead of the usual dull gray armor, and the smaller ships that had ridden its spacefold wake into the system were unmistakably Quarian-built, with their vaguely Piscean profiles and vertical ring prows. This was the Migrant Fleet, an arm of it anyway. Or at least its fist. The Quarian warships numbered about a dozen in total, fewer than the Blue Suns had brought, but they were all those sleek and deadly-looking cruisers apart from the Star Destroyer, which outmassed the Sun's fleet all by itself. As they maneuvered to intercept the Suns, it was obvious they meant business. Obvious enough for some of the Sun's captains, anyway. The mercenary fleet instantly lost all semblance of cohesion, the smaller ships breaking and running without any evident plan. Because of the relative positions of the two fleets when the Quarians defaulted, the Blue Sun's most direct escape vectors lay straight through the middle of the Quarian formation, and a couple of the Merc ships, apparently helmed by people in the grip of blind panic, went that way. The Quarians let them go, apparently indifferent as long as they left. Other Blue Sun's vessels completed hard-about turns, fleeing at impulse speeds until they could finish recalculating their routes and bolt to hyperspace. Vito Santiago stared in goggle-eyed astonishment at the main viewer, too stunned by the sudden appearance of the Star Destroyer to even be angry at his captains for fleeing in such a haphazard, amateurish, and above all, uncommanded way.
Son of a bitch, it's Genom, Relkin said. I don't know how they found out about this place, but if they want it, I don't think we're going to stop them having it.
Fuck. Fuck! Vito snarled, looking for something to throw. Not finding anything, he just stood there boiling for a couple of seconds, then said,
Kronfeld, get us out of here!
Aye, aye, sir, said Kronfeld, not bothering to conceal his relief.
That's it. Run, you Bastards, Captain Dacca declared with evident satisfaction. Don't make us waste our photon charges on your worthless hulls.
When the last Blue Sun's ship had vanished into hyperspace, Dacca ordered, All ships, downgrade to standby alert. Establish a perimeter and quarantine the area. Signal the flotilla that our mission is accomplished. Admiral Zora turned to Tali as she climbed back up from the trench and said,
Well, Tali Shukra, they're your friends down there. You'd better go down and let them know that we're here to help. Prevent any unfortunate misunderstandings when our dropships start arriving to help them evacuate.
Thank you, Admiral, for everything.
As they rode the turbocar back to the hangar deck, Miranda turned to Tali and said,
I can't believe it. We actually pulled it off.
She put a hand on Tali's shoulder.
You did a fantastic job dealing with the Admiralty.
I almost lost them, Tali replied. If I'd thought of the distress angle, the unwritten spacer's code sooner.
Don't start now, Miranda chided her. You didn't lose them.
Almost doesn't count for anything in this life. You got the job done, and done with style, too, she added with a smile. I wish Dan could have been there to see it.
Tali glanced at her, puzzled, until she remembered where they were and why it was important not to speak openly. Then she nodded.
Yeah, me too.
They arrived at the hangar bay containing the Kodiak to find Vedic and his squad waiting.
So you're leaving us again, eh, Tali Shukra? Vedic asked, half-joking.
Admiral Zora's orders, Tali told him. I have to coordinate the evacuation of Goodyear. Make sure the situation on the ground is secure.
Vedic nodded.
Well, pass my greetings to your friends down there, particularly the one who makes you get that faraway, distracted air, he added cheerfully.
Tali paused, looking at him in surprise, but said nothing. After a moment, Vedic added with a hint of gentle mockery,
I'm not as dumb as I look, Tali.
Keyless ally.
Ooh,
Miranda remarked as they flew away from the Archangel.
You be quiet, Tali replied.
I didn't say anything,
Miranda protested. Then, after a few seconds,
But I feel a little sorry for him. He's a nice boy.
Tali shook her head.
Just shut up.
Goodyear. Though she had known the plan when she left, Tali was shocked to see how much of Goodyear had been torn down in the day she'd been gone. All that remained was the grid of streets, the town hall, Charlie's, which the colonists were using as a temporary bunkhouse with their homes and possessions packed, and, standing forlorn and alone at the end of the street, Spare 14 and its garage. Griffin's Valkyrie was standing in Gurwalk mode next to the house, its armor pitted and scarred from its long day's combat. Tali flew past and landed in the square. As the 25 or 6 to 4's thrusters spooled down, the colonists thronged joyfully out of Charlie's. Griffin was in the lead, his flight suit swapped for a regular old Goodyear coverall. He and Tali met halfway, colliding in a fierce hug that, as usual, ignored inconvenient edges and fittings.
I wasn't sure you'd still be here,
Tali admitted softly.
Of course I'm still here, Griffin replied, then added, I haven't told you I love you yet,
have I?
Remiss of me, if not, because I love you.
She leaned back, looking at him in surprise, and then all but crushed him in her arms.
I love you, too.
The crowd gave them a couple of seconds to themselves, but only a couple, before gathering around the two and Miranda, slapping shoulders and cheering.
You did it,
Sheriff Chen declared, jubilantly throwing his hat in the air. We saw the fleet fold in on Vision's downlink. What an incredible sight.
And did you see the way those Blue Suns assholes cut and ran?
Alice Hernandez put in gleefully, her lucky card restored to her hat with much thanks.
Only time in my life I've ever been happy to see the game get spooked.
Knew you could do it, said Morden firmly.
Miss Tali, you got your face back.
Garrett Redding said, causing Tali to laugh.
Yes, Garrett, I did. We have spares for everything on the flotilla, she said.
Did they accept your gift? He asked.
I don't know yet, Tali said.
They're going to want to argue about it for a while. But you know what? Right now, I don't really care.
Holding on to Griffin's arm, surrounded by her friends and neighbors from Goodyear, she added,
I've got everything I want right here.
To celebrate their deliverance, the people of the soon-to-be former town of Goodyear cleared their bunk rolls and baggage out of Charlie's, set up Morden's DJ deck, and opened the taps for one last bash. Shame to let all that good beer go to waste anyway. While they were setting all that up, though, Griffin and Tally went down to Spare 14 and packed up what little they had there. It didn't amount to much, one small carton for each of them. Griffin stuffed his into his Valkyrie's little cargo compartment in front of the hard parts of his armor, and Tally stashed hers, along with her scattergun, which he insisted she keep, and Cyclone, in the 25 or 6-4. Then, as night was beginning to fall, they went to the garage, sorted out the tools, most of which belonged to the colony anyway, and stood side by side for a moment, regarding the mostly completed rocket ship shape of the Diogenes.
Guess we didn't need it after all, Tally mused. What should we do with it?
Griffin shrugged. Give it to the flotilla? Somebody'd probably have a use for it. Parts is parts.
Maybe. I hate to see it broken up after all the work we put into it, even if there's no really practical use for it.
She shook her head.
What an unquarian thing to say. You're a terrible influence, she joked. And speaking of terrible influences, I think Morden's work is finished working.
Griffin raised an eyebrow.
Oh? Oh. That is, if you're still interested, Tally said, glancing away.
Turning to face her fully, Griffin took her slim shoulders in his hands and smiled, trying to banish the worry he saw in the ghosts of her eyes.
Tali Shukran Arkithera, he said, I'm interested in anything you want to share with me.
Oh, well, she glanced slyly away.
That's a pretty wide range of interests.
Then, backing up slightly to get her arms free, she went on,
Let's start with this.
Consciously overriding years of deeply drilled training, she lifted her decorative hood away from her helmet and let it fall behind her shoulders, worked a couple of hidden fasteners, and gently pulled the helmet off, then set it on the workbench and just stood there, unmasked in the open air. She looked pensive and a little bit scared. Her silver eyes darted around the room, looking anywhere but at him, until she seemed to chide herself internally and make herself look him in the eye. Griffin grinned.
I was right, he said. About what? She asked hesitantly. You are beautiful.
Tally's response to that was to all but leap at him, throwing her arms around his neck and crush her lips to his. It was an inexpert kiss, all enthusiasm and no technique, but to judge by the pressure of his arms around her and his hands on her back, he didn't seem to mind. They stayed there like that for a span of time neither cared to record, her technique improving by leaps and bounds as she applied her natural talent for improvisation to the problem, until the metallic sound of someone banging on the door of Spare 14 next door jolted them from their mutual reverie.
Dan? Miss Tally? Are you in there?
The voice of Garrett Redding filtered through the garage walls.
You're missing the party!
Griffin palmed his face, though it was over a huge grin.
That kid, he said.
Well, how is he to know?
Tally replied, laughing. She picked up her helmet.
He thinks I can't ever take this off, so what could we be doing anyway? I'm wearing a space suit.
Maybe if we're really quiet, he'll go away, Griffin suggested. Tally fitted her helmet back in place and re-engaged her neck seals.
Don't be like that. It's the last party ever to be held in Goodyear. We can't skip out on it.
Besides, she added with a phantom wink, we have plenty of time. She held out her hand.
Shall we?
Laughing, he took it.
Yeah, all right. Let's go.
Tell you what, Tally told him as they left the garage. To tide you over, you can help me put on my dress.
Except for the beer, the Operation Desperate Gamble Victory Par
as the banner strung behind the stage declared it, the makers having run out of banner before running out of letters, was even more like a high school dance than the one after the canyon fight. For Griffin, the tone was set by the song that Morden happened, he thought, to be playing just as he and Tally entered the hall, which instantly and absolutely teleported him back to the Stearns High School gym in the winter of 1990. He found himself wishing he still had his letterman's jacket. It would have added a weird but somehow fitting counterpoint to Tally's dress, even if his letter had only been for marching band. "I could give you my class ring," he said during one of the brief pauses between songs when anyone's voice could be heard. "What?" she replied. "Never mind." After many, many dances with each other and various neighbors, they made their way to the bar, where a beaming Charlie served up a schooner of his private reserve. Here, where it was quieter, Tally leaned over to Griffin as he drank and said, "I've been thinking. You're going to have to get clear in the next couple of days before the Federation survey teams get here, and the flotilla, if they decide to accept Halo. Either way, I'm afraid the Admiralty will want me to stick around for at least a week, longer if my gift is accepted and my pilgrimage ends. We should set up some kind of rendezvous. Some place where we can find each other again." Griffin nodded. "You're right," he said. "Let's get on that first thing in the morning." Stifling a yawn, he eyed his wristwatch and did a quick mental calculation. Afternoon. He regarded his glass, then the row of its comrades that had built up over the course of the evening. "I think I might be a little drunk," he said thoughtfully. Tally giggled. "Perhaps a little." At the end of the current song, Morden leaned to the little mic on his DJ deck and announced, "Last call. After this song, don't have to stay here, but can't go home." Tally tilted her head toward the dance floor. Griffin grinned. "Last dance in Goodyear? I'll drink to that," he said. Then he knocked back the rest of his beer, put down the glass, and threaded after her to the middle of the crowded floor. Morden craftily waited until they were in position before touching the controls to start the last song of the night. If the first song Griffin had heard when he arrived was a blast from the past, this one was like a shotgun of nostalgia to the face, because not only was Def Leppard's Hysteria a fixture of his high school dances, it was always, always the last song they played before throwing everyone out. He was so surprised by the opening notes that he forgot to dance, but Tally took care of that in short order, and time seemed to melt away as they moved together around the floor, seemingly unaware that they were sharing it with anyone else, but never bumping into the other dancers. Over by the bar, Harriet Mitchell watched them together and sighed wistfully. "Jealous, sis?" Herrick asked, but she shook her head. "Just a little envious," she said. "You should apologize to him before he leaves tomorrow. He did everything he said he would." "Ah, he don't need my apology," said Herrick. "He's done all right." "Still," he admitted, "gonna be a lot duller wherever we end up without him around." The party broke up shortly thereafter, though of those attending, only Griffin, Tally, and Miranda still had homes to go back to. So after flowing out into the square to say their goodnights, most ended up going back into Charlie's to set up their bunks and catch a few hours' sleep before continuing with the evacuation prep in the morning. Miranda bade them goodnight and went into the nearly empty town hall to finish what little administrative paperwork remained to be done. Alone at last, Griffin and Tally walked slowly down the shallow hill towards Spare 14, marveling at how much further it seemed from the town hall with all the other houses gone. Zaid followed at a discreet distance, intending, as he had the night before, to pitch his bedroll under the Valkyrie. Griffin and Tally paused there to wish him good night. As such, they were the only three who saw the new ship arrive. "What the hell?" Tally muttered as she watched the landing lights wink on over in the field at what had been the end of Main Street, next to where she'd parked the 25 or 6-4. The new arrival was larger, with big, upward-canted wings, a Predator-class scout ship, most likely. She raised up her Omni-tool. "Archangel Control, this is Goodyear." "Go ahead, Goodyear," replied whichever Archangel comm officer was on duty. "There's a Predator-class ship arriving down here. I thought you guys were maintaining a quarantine. What's going on?" "Wait one, Goodyear," the operator replied. Then, a moment later, he said, "That ship's 3WA, Tally Shukra. Codename Lovely Angel. They can go anywhere they like."
Tally regarded the holographic tool with puzzlement for a moment, then blinked and turned to Griffin. He stood staring off into the distance, his face unreadable, as the Predator's ramp ground down and a single figure, silhouetted by the light from inside the ship, started to descend.
"Oh, no," said Tally in a small voice.
Griffin gritted his teeth. A single syllable emerged from between his tightly compressed lips, saturated with a potent mix of despair, disbelief, and fury.
"Okay."
Then he seemed to become aware of his surroundings again. Kay was more than 100 yards away, and there were no lights where he, Tally, and Zaid were standing. She probably hadn't seen them yet, and even if she had, she wouldn't have recognized him. "Tally," he said, "go and warn the others to stay out of sight. Whatever happens, I don't want anyone else getting involved. Remember what I told you about her."
"But what are you going to..."
"Go now, Tally. She hasn't seen us yet. There's not much time." He took her shoulder and locked eyes with her for a second.
"Go."
Tally's fists clenched. She'd stowed all her weapons aboard the shuttle. The lovely angel was now between her and them. Unarmed, there was very little else she could do. And if he was even slightly right about how crazy Kay was, the others did need to be warned that they were in danger. Again.
"Be careful," she said, almost inaudibly, and then turned and ran back toward Charlie's.
Griffin watched her go for a moment, glanced back to check Kay's progress. She was walking up what used to be Main Street, obviously ready for trouble, and if she hadn't seen him or Zaid, she'd certainly seen the Valkyrie by now. Snarling, he jumped up onto the VF's arm, opened the cargo hatch, and hauled out his gun belt, then jumped down and started strapping it on. Zaid put a hand on his shoulder to stop him, else he'd have marched right past, and asked,
"Wait a second. Where the hell do you think you're going?"
Griffin rounded on the mercenary, his face flushed dark with fury and beer in the substance light. "I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to tell that red-headed bitch that I am sick of her fucking up my life," he roared. "I've had enough of running away. Every time I find something that makes me happy, she shows up and ruins it." Raising a finger under Zaid's nose, he added, "Not this time, my friend." He jerked his gallant from its holster. "This time, one of us is gonna die. Now either get out of my way or grab your iron and come help me show her what the fuck is what." Zaid gazed at Griffin with his mismatched eyes for a couple of seconds, looking over his shoulder to see that Kay had started running toward them and shouting, and nodded.
"All right,"
he said, turning to pick up his rifle from where it leaned against Vision's HW antenna, and Griffin relaxed very slightly.
"That's what I'm talking," he said,
and then Zaid turned back and punched him very, very hard, sending him to the ground like a dropped rock. Up at the top of the hill, Tally heard the blow and turned to see Griffin go down. Over at what had been the corner of 10th and Main, Kay drew up in puzzlement, then seemed to gather what was happening and set off running again at an even more furious pace. Hefting Griffin like a sack of oats, Zaid climbed up the side of the Valkyrie and dumped him into the cockpit, strapped him in, and flicked the switch that gave Vision control of the fighter's autopilot. The way the system was wired, she didn't have direct authority over the flight controls, so there was no useful way for her to take the ship into combat. That had been one of his jobs, one of the reasons she'd hired him for his hands, as her joke had gone, but it would be enough to ensure their escape. She blipped up on the main VDU, looking somber. "Thanks, Zaid. Will you be okay?"
"I'll be fine."
A blaster bolt whined off the Valkyrie's scored armor near his perch on the Gerwalk arm.
"You better get moving."
"Okay, and thanks for all your help." Zaid smiled with a warmth that would have shocked pretty much anyone else who'd ever met him and replied,
"Thanks for yours. Now get gone. I'll hold it till you're clear."
Vision's image waved goodbye as the canopy closed. Zaid slapped the boarding ladder up into place, then jumped down from the Valkyrie's arm as the turbine spooled up with a piercing whine. He snatched his rifle from the side of the HW antenna and used its butt to knock the cable connectors free from the side of the fighter as it lifted off, then dove for cover before he could be roasted by the exhaust heat as Vision punched the throttles open and the Valkyrie leaped into the sky. In seconds, the fighter was out of sight, vanishing over the upspin mountains. A moment later, the sonic boom rolled back up the valley and over the town. Kay skidded to a halt a half dozen yards from where the Valkyrie had been parked, turned to face the sky it had vanished into, and unleashed a spine-chilling shriek of primal rage, pumping round after round into the sky in that general direction. Tally would have launched herself down the slope like a missile, unarmed but intent on ending both Kay's life and Zaid's for what, between them, they had just done. She wasn't sure how she would have accomplished that, possibly with the concentrated force of her fury alone. It was easily the equal of Kay's right now, arguably even greater, focused as it was through the lens of her anguish. Would have, but for an arm that suddenly encircled her waist like a hoop of steel, and another that did the same to her shoulders, holding her firmly in place. Her arms still free, she reached forward, straining, as if by wanting it hard enough she could reach down the hill and crush the life from both humans.
"Let me go!"
she snarled, throwing an elbow back. She connected with something, connected hard, drawing a grunt of pain from whoever had pinned her. Looking down, she saw that the arms holding her felt like steel because they were, or at least some advanced composite. The person who had seized her was Morden Solas.
"No, no, no," the old Solarian said urgently. "Stop, Tali Shukra, stop. This fight you can't possibly win. Throwing away your life, stupid, wasteful, serves no purpose."
He held her a little tighter as she struggled against his grip and said, with more intensity than she'd ever heard in his voice before, "Defeat never permanent while you still live." That seemed to penetrate the veil of rage that had blanketed her mind. After a moment, she stopped fighting and just sagged in Morden's embrace, as if she would have fallen without him to support her. Then she got her feet back under her and raised a hand to grip his mechanical wrist where it crossed her shoulder, bowed her head, and began to sob. Gently, he turned her around so that she could put her head on his shoulder, patted her back, and let her get it all out. Below, while this was happening, Kay stopped shooting into the sky and whirled with a bestial snarl. The muzzles of her weapons were glowing red and pinging softly as she swung them toward Zaid. Even in the dim blue planet light, the pupils of her eyes were the size of purely theoretical particles. Foam flecked the corners of her mouth as she panted for breath. When she could speak again at all, what came out, in a voice not far removed from the one she'd uttered that scream in, was,
"You just cost me 60 years of my life!"
If Zaid was in any way intimidated, he had an odd way of showing it. He spat on the ground between her feet and said flatly,
"Cry me a goddamn river. You ought to be ashamed of yourself."
Stepping closer, completely ignoring the weapons, he went on,
"Call yourself a professional. Professionals don't shoot first and make positive IDs later. Professionals don't put innocent lives in harm's way to reach their targets. Professionals have standards."
He pointed an accusing finger in her face, his mismatched eyes boring into hers.
"You're just a psycho with a badge. 60 years of your life. You wasted those, honey, not me."
He pointed up the hill to Tally, sobbing in Morden's arms.
"See that girl over there? You just cost her a whole lot more."
Kay kept glaring at him, but most of the mad fury in her face had ebbed into something like miffed astonishment as his little speech went on. By the end, she looked more baffled than angry. She lowered her emags and put them away.
"Shit," she said. "God damn it! Shit!"
She looked up the hill. "Who is she?" Zaid shook his head.
"What do you care?" he said. "Just another piece of wreckage in your wake. Nobody important. Nobody who matters to you. The only person who matters to you is inside that tinfoil bikini."
Kay shook her head disgustedly.
"Fuck! I was so close!"
She looked up the hill at Tally and Morden again, then back to Zaid. "If I find out you people knowingly helped him..."
"You won't do a goddamn thing about it," Zaid finished for her, "because you haven't got the jurisdiction, and you'll be too busy chasing the next lead anyway. Making sure he can never rest. Hounding him until the fight he wanted to have with you tonight actually happens. And then you'll both be able to rest. Permanently."
"Don't get all high and mighty with me," Kay snapped. "Do you know what he did?"
"I know what he's accused of. Last time I checked, though, this wasn't Zardon, and you're not a judge."
He shook his head.
"Get the hell out of here. I'm not getting paid to care what's wrong with your head, much less fix it. Maybe you should get a life."
Kay gave the old mercenary a hard stare. It didn't seem to interest him. After a few seconds, she pivoted on her heel and walked back to the lovely angel, knowing as she went that the trail would already be cold. She had never been able to track the actual movements of that Valkyrie. No one ever had. Its mix of warp and hyperdrive propulsion meant that it was the work of mere minutes to be light hours away in any direction and leave no useful vector traces at all, just a tangle of mutually exclusive red herrings. Tracking him that way was a waste of time. Always had been. She'd just have to go back to Missouri and wait for him to cause another ripple in the net. Could happen next month. Could be a couple of years. But it had happened. It always happened. And she'd be there to start the chase all over again. She paused at the base of the ramp and looked back up toward what had been the town. There were two figures standing at the top of the ridge now, conferring. The bulky form of the merc she'd just had the argument with, and a skinnier silhouette with an oddly shaped head, maybe a Solarian. Partway down the hill was a third figure, indistinct at this distance, but walking slowly, robotically, as a person walked who was plunged into a deep and dark reverie. Shaking her head, Kay walked up the ramp into the belly of the lovely angel in, had she but known, the very same way. Tally let herself into spare 14. The house was dark, silent, empty. As empty as it had been when she and Griffin had first arrived in Goodyear, with just the prefab furniture and fittings, no personal effects of any kind to be seen. None of the touches that had made it a home, for all that it was a characterless, factory-built tin shack. She went into the bedroom, worked her way out of her dress, and hung it up. She'd pack it in her duffel bag tomorrow, when she'd leave for good so spare 14 could be torn down. She'd live aboard the 25 or 6-4 for however long it took to oversee the evacuation, or shuttle back and forth from the Archangel, depending on how things developed. Either way, this would be her last night here, and her only one alone. Because she could, she took off her helmet. Because she could, she took off everything else. The covers felt exquisitely strange against her bare skin as she climbed into bed. Without the filters of her helmet and the incomplete and processed coverage of her suit's tactile relays, everything was so immediate, as if she'd been operating the world from a safe distance with a pair of tongs, and now she was right inside the reactor core. She could feel the weave of the textiles in the bedclothes, smell, she didn't know what. It wasn't unpleasant, but it had never made it through her atmosphere processor, whatever it was. She wondered how humans could possibly live like this, decided she would find out, if only just for tonight. The tears came again, and this time there was no helmet housekeeping system to whisk them away. They just flowed, wetting the pillowcase. It seemed more honest, somehow. Tally reached to the bedside stand and pressed the power key on the one item, besides herself and her clothes, that hadn't been in the house when she and Griffin arrived. There are warnings of gales in Dover, White, Portland, Plymouth, Biscay, Fitzroy, Seoul, Shannon, Bailey, Faroes, and Southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at midnight, high, Central North Sea, 1035. This concludes the main body of Starcrossed. It will be extended in Appendix, Happily Ever After.